This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from the AUVSI show in Denver, Colorado, where we're hearing a lot about drones used for emergency response. I'm with Chris Todd of Airborne Response, Miami-based organization. Chris, I attended your presentation. You guys did a lot of flying during the hurricanes. You learned a lot. Let's start by talking a little bit about what some of those missions were.
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, public information is the information that people want to know. They want to know how bad is bad. Is my house still there? Even people who are not in the area that's affected from around the world, there's tremendous interest in a hurricane and a storm, and they want to know what the situation is. From there, search and rescue, damage assessment, inspecting critical infrastructure, power lines especially, which tend to get blown down, trees that are blocking the power lines. And then after, in the recovery phase, we've got insurance needs for claims adjusting, as well as beach erosion. The list goes on and on. And in every hurricane, I'm sure we're going to continue to evolve the use cases.
And where did you fly?
We flew in South Florida, specifically Miami-Dade, Broward, Collier counties were primarily where we conduct our flight operations.
And what sorts of vehicles are you using?
SUVs would be for the ground transport, and then for the aircraft, predominantly DJI. The missions we were flying were more vertical in nature, in a smaller geographic area where copters made the most sense. We do have some other organizations in Florida that were using fixed-wing aircraft for longer-range damage assessment and in search and rescue.
And that was all visual line of sight?
It was all visual line of sight, although my understanding is Florida Power and Light did secure a BIVLOS waiver to conduct some inspections of assets that were far offshore that there was no other way to get to. And I think it was the first BVLOS ECOA that was issued in conjunction with disaster response.
Now, as you said, as everybody said in the presentation, the flying is the easy part. What comes next, and what probably most of us don't think about, is the enormous amount of data you're producing and how to handle it, because if you don't handle it right, you might as well not have flown in the first place.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, you're always at the mercy of these little SD cards, which from time to time can even fail. So every time a flight lands and you retrieve the data, you're hoping that it's there. Typically it is. And then you've got to preserve it. We tend to back it up in the field with external hard drives and not erase that SD card till we get it uploaded to whatever the final destination is. The types of data depend on the mission. Public information, it's a lot of video, but we tend to shoot in lower resolution 720p. That's easier to upload and transfer, shorter clips that really tell the story. If you're doing a mapping mission, you might have more extensive data. If you're using LIDAR, you're looking at a lot of data. Again, the mission is going to define what type of data and what volume of data you've got to manage, but it is the key to all of this.
If you're doing a damage assessment survey type mapping mission, how did you handle the GIS data challenge? How did you coordinate that? Say, this is what we're looking at, but where is it?
Well, the nice thing with most of the technology out there is that the image is our geo-referenced. So, we'll note where we've launched and retrieved the aircraft. The aircraft will note where it's capturing each image with the geo-referenced GPS information. And from there, it's just making sure we hang on to the data and get it to the right person so they can extract that information.
One of the things you mentioned was the importance of coordinating this ahead of the need, so you just can't show up with a drone and say, I'm here to do this, because they won't know what you can do and they won't know the value of the service. So probably going forward, you'll have better ways of doing that.
Yeah, pre-planning, this is really more of a logistics mission in many ways than even the flight operations. Operating the aircraft is the easy part. It's the planning and logistics, having enough fuel, having enough batteries, having a plan on where you're going to get more fuel, food, recharge the batteries, but also knowing where you need to be. Hurricanes are a unique animal because we've got a lot of upfront preparation time, which is great for the planning phase, and pre-positioning the flight teams along the forecast track of the storm is essential to make sure you can get eyes and ears up for a rapid response and start getting that data. But if you don't have that information and you don't have a plan, it's not going to work. And we know there's a lot of folks who want to come down and help. There's really two phases to these operations. There's the initial response, where pre-planning is essential, And then there's the recovery phase for the commercial operators who really want to, you know, have a chance at maybe making some money, find different types of missions. But other than those two, I mean, don't just show up with your drone. You'll probably be more of the problem than the solution at that point.
So if you look forward here, what are the big lessons you learned in the 2017 season that you'll apply going forward?
Sure. Number one, it's early. You know, this was the first hurricane to strike Florida in about 14 years. So this type of technology wasn't widely used or prevalent 14 years ago. So it was a first in many respects. So the technology is going to continue to evolve around the, not just around the aircraft, but around the data transfer, around the software we use. Other learnings included, you've got a pre-plan, logistics, and believe it or not, we learned that it's about more than just UAS. And in a lot of the neighborhoods we went into, our flight teams representing certain companies like an energy company might be the first contact these folks have had for 3 or 4 days with no power. They've got questions, and you represent hope to the afflicted in that they see that people now are taking notice of their plight. They want information, and you've got to take a little extra time to speak with those folks and kind of put them at ease, and it helps go a long way to get your job done and also represent the company you might be working for.
In that sense, you're really a first responder, aren't you?
In many ways, yes. And at Airborne Response, what we do is we put our pilots through ICS training, the 100, 200, 7, 8, and 559 damage assessment, to allow them to integrate with the first response community, speak common terminology around the incident command system and the National Incident Management System.
Okay, Chris Todd, thanks very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from AUVSI in Denver, Colorado. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.